Blog Talk Radio.
Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. Hello, everyone. I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and a big welcome to you and Blog Talk Radio and How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. It is Thursday, October 14th, and once again, like clockwork, we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, as I do every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific time, and I want to thank you for joining us again and again and again, and we love to hear from you, so if you would love to listen live or ask questions, please do so by dialing 347-857-2710. Again, that number is 347-857-2710. We are here live until 3:45 p.m. Pacific time. And I just wanted to get back to that Leonard Cohen song, Anthem, and how it so rings true for my guest today on a certain level about what her message and what she does about being perfect, our imperfections, and loving ourselves as we are. Well, you are in for a very, very special treat today. Influence of architecture and music are woven into the one-of-a-kind designs by my guest today, Monique Bureau, owner of Bureau Design Studio. And it is Monique's hope that through her organic, imperfectly balanced jewelry designs, people will see value in such imperfection and hopefully will lead to thoughts of accepting their own imperfections and those of others. So, as you always do, my very special listeners, please give a warm welcome to a gem of a woman, Monique Bureau. Hi, Monique.
Hello. Hello, thank you. That was a thank you for that lovely intro.
Absolutely. I this Leonard Cohen song, I had mentioned at another show because I thought it, no pun intended, but it rings true to, I think, what you and I had once talked about regarding the thoughts behind your jewelry design is about perfection and imperfection.
Mm-hmm.
So share with our listeners exactly what that is.
Well, as I was listening to you to read that I was thinking exactly that. What I mean by that is, I choose in the stones, in many of the stones I use, not all, but many of the stones I use, and certainly in the style of jewelry that I make, but the goal, the objective is to create work that's not based on perfect symmetry, but work that's based on balance and a sense of balance and a sense of beauty in the imperfection. And this became important to me as I was working on the jewelry creations and just really appreciating what nature gives us and who we are as human beings and working in architecture where it's really, there's a lot about perfection. Of course, it's about balance, but there's a lot about getting it right and symmetry and all these different things. And I see people around me all the time feeling very frustrated with themselves and others because things aren't perfect. And making the jewelry, I just really began to dwell on the nature of the materials and how beautiful they are in their imperfections.
You know, perfect is a funny word because, let me see if I can get Merriam-Webster here. And perfect, according to Merriam-Webster, is complete, free of fault, well-suited, capable. And like you said, I think we feel the need to fall into a box of perfection, that if we don't fit, and I always hate to use the box, but if we don't fit into the parameters, let's say, of what perfect is, then we are not perfect.
Mm-hmm. And free of fault in particular is really rough for a lot of people because, in fact, no one's ever truly free of fault. I mean, no one's perfect, and also because perfection in itself is actually an interpretation. Everything is an interpretation, in a sense. And so in making this jewelry, I say, okay, we're creating these things that have their own sense of beauty. And when people see them and they feel a reaction, they're drawn to the piece. It's not necessarily explainable, and that's what I really like. I don't want someone to say, well, I really love that shape because it's so perfectly round. I mean, you know, that's not what I'm after, is making a perfectly round anything, but a shape that has a sense of balance, and that is, of course, very subjective.
I think you obviously must tap into something, a button, a hot button for a lot of people when subconsciously maybe they feel a sense of imperfection, of not being as beautiful as someone else, and they see a piece of your jewelry that resonates beauty and balance in a different way. Because I had asked you where you got your ideas for your designs, and you were telling me a story of how you get an idea that you really trust that inner voice to guide you, and you look at it and see where it's going. And sometimes your pieces have their own personalities, that they want to become something other than what you intended them to be.
Yes, that happens quite a bit. Particularly the more complicated a piece gets, the more it wants to be itself. I do. I get an idea about a piece. Let's say it's in particular the sculpted work, and I think this whole notion of the imperfection and the balance really comes into the sculpted work, which I create by using what I would call traditional sculpting techniques of the olden day, you know, tools, files, and hammers and such, and I can set out to make a particular piece, but depending on temperature, atmosphere, all these different conditions, and the technique, it's not 100% controllable in the sense that things when you hit the piece, its reaction, if your angle is maybe a little different than the previous angle, it responds by deforming in a certain manner, and these deformations then get bent and caressed even, but with an intent. And what I find is very interesting, when I'm making the work, if I feel pressure of time or I feel some pressure to try to make two things exactly the same because someone said to me, oh, I saw this and I saw that you made that, someone else bought it, but I want one just like that. Well, I have this idea, I need to please them, I need to make that. And that creates pressure. And I find that 9 times out of 10, I break it. It just doesn't work. So,
well, you brought something very important. You mentioned something about pleasing someone. Not that you don't want to give your client what they want, but I think you're correct in saying that when we try to recreate something that was already recreated, and we put that pressure on ourselves, it can never happen.
No, exactly. It never happens. And so, you know, in the beginning I tried to do that kind of thing, and now I'm really clear with people, and and I usually, and I've got images I can show, okay, you know, this is the genre, like I've got a bracelet, fluidity, and people love it, and they buy a lot of it, and which makes me very happy. It makes them happy. That's part of what makes it all so great. And they're happy, and we're all happy. Anyway, so now I show people, look, you want one of those? I will love to make that for you. And it's going to look something. It's going to go around your wrist, and it's going to be in this range of look, but there's really no guarantee, you know?
Well, that's beautiful. You know what? I want to give people your website, because since we are live radio, I'm sure people who are listening on the Internet would like to be able to check out some of your jewelry designs as we're talking about it. So they can go to www.adorn, A-D-O-R-N, thyself.com. And as we're chatting about your creations, people can log in and see what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That'd be great. Yeah, then they'll know what I was talking about. Yeah, on the sculpted, I think it's called sculpted, the page. Anyway, there are these two bracelets, and then you can see, like, the difference. And those pieces start, you know, I have the same point of departure when I start them, but they go their own direction.
But I think it's beautiful. You allow that as an artist. You allow yourself to be guided by, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, a higher power, an inner voice, or whatever that is for anyone, and you're letting go of the outcome. You're surrendering yourself to that art piece, that it doesn't have to be what perhaps you originally intended, because maybe there's something even better or more unusual at the other end.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, I do. I do surrender, and it can take sometimes quite a long time for a piece to be completed because of that. Because if it starts to go a direction that's confusing to me as I'm working with it, it starts to deform in a manner that is in some way confusing, I have to put it down, I have to step back. And I have to give it time. And I look at it, and then I maybe caress it and massage it and try to sculpt it further with more hammering or bending. But it can take quite a while to really for the balance to fall into place. And I always have to hold the intention, kind of a loving intention towards it and a supportive intention towards the piece so the balance can be found.
But I like how, just in your description of how you start to create the piece, you lovingly caress it. That's so beautiful to hear you describe how you work, because in essence it's as if you have a person in your hand who is an individual and you're lovingly caressing them, and that's why it's unique, because it has a lot of heart and soul in it.
Well, yeah, you know, I have to say that this whole notion of bringing people closer to their own perfections, embracing one's own perfections, is also seeing one's own perfections. And there is pain in that, and there is suffering in that. And I feel that I'm getting in touch with that when I'm making this work. You know, When we look at ourselves and we're honest with ourselves about our imperfections, our histories, our pain, that in itself can be painful. And we have to go through the pain of that to come out on the other end and accept, because you have to understand and know to accept. And it's a process. And when I'm working on this work, I mean, in a way, I feel like I'm going through that process with these pieces and not break it, right? Because if you don't treat them properly, they break. I mean, I'm working with the natural elasticity of the material. I say natural in the sense that when I get it, it's a rod. Like, you know, you think of everyone's probably seen maybe some cable, like guys doing electrical work, and inside those plastic coded cables are these wires. Okay, so when I start, it's like wires of different thicknesses. If you're ever at Home Depot or something, you can go to the copper section, see all these thicknesses. And that's how I get it.
But it's also how, in a sense, we getting a little philosophical of how we treat ourselves. If we don't treat ourselves with the kid gloves that we deserve to be treated, then we can't be the end result of who we are is not, I don't want to say that it's not that good, but it's not a loving way to look at ourselves.
Right.
And yeah. Allow ourselves to grow and have that imperfection. We have to treat ourselves, we have to love ourselves first so we can love other people. And
absolutely.
In a general sense, then it's very interesting. And I know there are other architects who have taken the stab at designing jewelry. How do you feel your designs differ from some other architects that go into jewelry making?
Well, someone lovingly gave me a book once of jewelry by architects, and it was so interesting. As I looked through it, I saw so much geometry, and that's often what I see when I see jewelry by architects, very geometric, interlocking forms and planes and, you know, and now with extruded processes through the computer, some of them are forms, you know, that are really fantastic shapes, but they're clearly created with some kind of geometry. And what I mean by that is like it's a computer-aided design process that's using a geometric. And my work is really organic. I go towards the organic. And that's how I would say it's much is the biggest difference.
So you don't design your work first and then create it with a particular material. You kind of create as you go with that material.
Well, I do have I do come up with ideas for the jewelry, and sometimes I do make sketches for pieces, not all. But some pieces, actually a sketch may come out because I get the idea for the piece and I'm nowhere near a place where I could make it or have any materials. And so as not to lose the idea, I try to document it in some way. Sometimes it's a set of words, but sometimes it is some kind of a sketch. But that's really just a point of departure because once I get the material going, the sketch is usually a fantasy. And once I get the material going, then we get into reality. And then meaning the material, the way it performs, behaves, the reaction, what I can do with it, can't do. And then it'll start to take its own direction and its own life at that point. You know, the fantasy versus reality. That's kind of like life, right? Fantasy and reality. But anyway.
Amen, sister. Yeah, how many fantasies do we all have? And I think, that wasn't how I imagined it.
Right. And, you know, sometimes fantasies are just best left right there in fantasy land. But
that's very true. Yeah, well, that's how I kind of feel about, not to get a little R-rated, but when you, go see a sexually explicit film and you see everything, to me there's nothing left to the imagination. And that's
right.
Part of the allure is is what you leave to your imagination, your own ideas, your own quote-unquote fantasy, because everyone's fantasy is different.
That's right. And in the making of the work, I would say my fantasy becomes my inspiration. The fantasy is the inspiration point. And so, you know, okay, there's bracelets, there's necklaces, there's earrings and stuff. I have to admit, earrings I think are a little bit of weakness in my thing, but I'm coming around with it, coming around. But bigger pieces, bigger things are in some way easier to make. Earrings, there's a lot of logistics. I mean, in all this jewelry making, there's actually ergonomics and ergonomics. There's ergonomics, let's call it. Maybe that's the best cap word. But like it's come to an earring. I mean, an earring has to be within a certain weight. So I may have an idea about an earring, but it may not be able to be made in the types of materials I use, because I don't use plastic. I use gold, silver, and I'll use a gold fill, which is an alloy of gold and brass. Usually it doesn't have any nickel, so that's good for people who don't tolerate nickel. But gold fill can be anywhere from 20 to 40% real gold within this alloy, which makes it a little stronger, actually. But so I use these materials, and I use real stones. I don't use plastic. I don't use glass. And so in using these materials, you know, there is, you know, you have to stay within certain weights on earrings. So that kind of limits, in a way, some of the things, some of my fantasies. But sometimes it starts off as an idea for an earring, and then it becomes a necklace because it's too heavy. But
hey, I just got a visual of somebody really hanging low with those earrings. They're gorgeous, but I need two guys to help me wear them.
Right. Or either it's like, you know how you've got dinner shoes, you know, these high heels that you can only really wear for 2 hours, and most of the time it's got to be sitting down, but they're so beautiful you want to wear them anyway. So, yeah, that would be like one of those earrings. They're so heavy you can only really wear it for 2 hours. But, no, I actually don't usually make that because it's just not going to be fun to wear. So we've been talking very seriously. I mean, really the idea here is that the idea of the jewelry in the end is that it is fun and that people are excited, and the beauty, they feel drawn to the piece. Maybe they don't know why. I make this piece called Unity. I'm going to talk about that for a minute.
Unity, how do you spell that?
Yeah, Unity.
Unity. I thought it was Unity. I thought, wow, that's really cool. I like that.
Okay, well, maybe I'll make one like that. But it's called Unity. And I'd call it, or a venue that sells my work, is the loft at Liz's, which is on La Brea near 6th, just north of Wilshire. They've termed it my signature piece, best-selling piece. And what it is I've taken, there's two relatively round, they're sort of circular pieces. It's one wire that where two circles are made, and then they're wrapped together. And so they're never exactly the same shape. They're slightly dissimilar in shape. Sometimes they're more elliptical. Sometimes they're more round. And the reason I call it Unity is because the idea of that piece is really we people are all unique, but we're bound together by our humanity. It's a why can't we all get along type of piece. And it's just about unity. And this is, again, about accepting the imperfections, loving ourselves, therefore loving other people. You know, when we can accept these imperfections, we can just live more lovingly with each other and accepting each other. And anyway, this unity piece, I've seen, and it's been really interesting, when I've got several, like at an event where I've got several on display, and each one is slightly different, and people are literally like, well, I like that one. That's the one that I like. It's not like they're interchangeable. It's so interesting because they're really very much very similar design. On my website, I have just one of them, which happens to be on a choker. But they come much larger, too. And sometimes it's a single – sometimes it's a larger one. It's just a single loop just because I've come to really appreciate the shape of it. But it's – anyway, it's just interesting to see how people respond. Again, this is about people keying into their own personal sense of balance and what they find attractive and what they feel resonates with them.
You know, when you look at other forms of merchandise, whether it's the handbag, I had a gentleman on my show, Michael Tonello, who talked about the Birkin bag, the Hermes bag, that one bag,
oh, yeah.
And how people had to have that bag and what people went through to get that bag. You know, it had to be the perfect shape. And I know people are funny, and I think that's the beauty of people. They'll always surprise you. You never know what they're gonna say. And people actually want to be your unity. They want to all look alike, conform. So if someone had something different, they don't want to be the only one to have something different. I would choose another piece. That would be me.
What, Well, you know, actually, my client is the person that wants to be different. My client's the person that wants to be the only one at the party with that piece on. And that's, I don't know that that's the majority of the people out there. Probably not. But those, that's who my client is.
But but because then you're unique. You're a little different. I mean, we all tend to conform. That's part of, I think, the human condition on a certain level. But it's nice to, you know, maybe people have fear about standing out. Maybe they think it's their stand out. I'll get noticed. But if I'm like everybody else, then I don't have to worry about standing out and performing and talking and expressing my opinions, et cetera.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess fortunately for me, in the venues that carry my jewelry, I think are more places that attract the people that are seeking the unique. I think some people are afraid, perhaps, to stand out. But,
just to be. They're afraid to discover who they are because maybe they're not perfect or they don't live up to a belief or a standard that someone set for them. It's not even their own, or maybe their own standards. And, and plus your jewelry, the beauty, another thing is that it's not mass produced. You take time and it's the quality and like you said, each stone and shape and twist and turn has a very unique style to it. So
I do make each piece myself. It is absolutely not mass produced. And
how long does it take you to? What's the average amount of time you spend on a piece of jewelry?
Oh my gosh! You know, I'd love to say there's an average. There's just no average. You know. The bangle bracelets can be made relatively quickly, but like I've got on my website, it happens to be on the page that lists stores. There is actually a necklace is, I don't know, the fluidity. It's called fluidity, I think. Anyway, it's long. That piece must have taken 6 months because the first one, 6 months. After that, they've taken less amount of time. But it's because I had no idea where that was going. I had no idea it was going to become a necklace. It was a sculptural piece. It was, started off to be a bracelet, and it just went wild. It would not behave to be like one of the fluidity bracelets on the website. And it just went kind of like snakes out of a can. It just somehow the thing went wild. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to stop right here.
Yeah.
Put it down over there. And, you know, that's, I don't know what's going to happen with that.
Mommy's going out for a little while, and when I come back,
I hope you
behave yourself, and we'll talk.
Right, exactly. And but on the other hand, there's the piece they call the Hidden Power, which is really what started me in this business. And that piece, which is about women, the power of women, and it takes weeks with that because the stones are randomly wrapped and then they are attached to the necklace. But in order for me to feel that there is a sense of balance of the piece, that the arrangement of the stones is correct, I have to look at it and study it. Because a lot of times it makes me feel uncomfortable at first. And so I have to look at it over time before I can feel comfortable that it actually has arrived in its imbalance.
Well, that's true. That's very true. And what I so enjoy about your jewelry designs is that it's art. Not to take anything away from anybody else that designs jewelry, but it's really like a piece of art. You know, you go into a museum and you see these collections about that. Oh, they were talking about here in Los Angeles at the LA County Museum, they have the Resnick Gallery, which houses a large collection of the Resnick family paintings and whatnot. And it's just kind of a, I don't know, this is what I have, and it's art, and most people can't afford it. It's like a show place to show you, to show the world their art, which is fine, because a lot of us can't afford a Manet or some form of sculpture or Rodin or what have you. But I kind of liken your jewelry to art in the sense that it's an art piece, because with your architectural and music background, you've taken those influences and woven them into your design, so you're wearing art. It has its own power in another sense.
Yeah, I would agree. I like that interpretation. I would agree with
that. Thank you. Every now and then I come up with a good interpretation.
Very good. You can have that one. Yeah.
Well, it's true because people can't. That's why there are prints available of a famous painting or what have you, because people who appreciate art would like to have something that they can afford within their budget, and say, you know, I have art and jewelry. I think most jewelry is art, because most people take the time. The design is elegant, and but it's wearable art.
Mm-hmm. And so my pieces. I mean, even though they're a series, like the Unity is a series because there's more than one of them. The fluidity necklaces and bracelets are a series, however, even though there are a series, each one is unique. I have not numbered the fluidity bracelets really, although I keep records and I could count how many are out there, but I have numbered the fluidity necklaces. And there was something you talked about there with the artwork and not everyone could afford it. One thing that I really, really like to do, and that is I really like to think that there's something in everybody's budget. I make something that fits in everybody's budget, because while not everyone can afford everything, they'll be able to afford something. Because I think that if people feel drawn to it and feel attracted to it, the unique shapes. I mean, for example, I don't go out there and say, okay, I'm going to make something. What's a good example? Someone was talking to me once about an abstract painter that they knew who was an abstract painter all of his life, and he became an older man. He took up sculpture, and then he began to sculpt birds, but like exact replicas. And it was just so bizarre, because he was an abstract painter, and then he started to do these birds, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's such a departure. I consider the jewelry, particularly the sculpted work in particular, to be abstract, like abstract art. These are abstract shapes. These are not known shapes. It's not a hexagon. It's not a triangle. It's not a rectangle. It's not an ellipse. They're abstract shapes that I make. And if someone finds that this abstract shape resonates with them and they want to wear it and they just feel like it's something they want very intensely, you know, I want them to be able to have it. So for that reason, I may take a sterling silver piece and I might put it on a leather cord to bring down the cost, so people can afford that. Or maybe they can just buy the pendant itself, and then they can put it on a chain themselves, or, you know. So I try to create things in all ranges, because I think everybody should be able to have jewelry, have something they like, to have something that's unique.
You're absolutely correct. I 100% agree with you. And you also do commission pieces. So if people have a particular idea of something that they want, you're their gal.
Well, you know, that's a really good way to put that, commission pieces. What I would say is that I do commissioned pieces. I make pieces specifically for people, but they can point to things I've made and say they'd like it to be like this, or maybe they say they want certain stones in it that I can work with. But I don't exactly, like, some people will bring to you a picture of something made by, I don't know, something by I can't right now, I'm going blank, Ryan is a designer out there that I've met, wonderful person, and they would bring me a Ryan, and they'd say, well, can you make me something like this? I'd be like, well, sorry, no. But it's somewhat, what has happened, you'll love this, is a man, a wonderful man, came to me and he said, you know, I'm married to the most wonderful woman in the world, but in my life, I've met some people who are treasures to me. And I would love to have a piece. I don't make many of these anymore, but I'm saying that. But these are called crystal collages, where I take crystals and I wrap them together in a bunch, you know. And I should make them some more. But anyway, he says, I would love you to do the crystal collage that you do. And here I want to tell you this story, and I want you to create one that will represent the people in this story. So he told me the story. It involved himself. It involved a couple other people and a child and some experiences they had together. And he said, I want you to make this into a piece of jewelry for my wife. And he sent me a picture. He mailed me a picture of his wife so I knew what she looked like. And it was a beautiful, wonderful, very playful picture. And I made a piece. And I gave it to him. And he just about cried. He's like, oh, my God, I really feel the story in this. And I'm so happy. And he gave it to his wife, and he sent me a picture of her wearing it. And he said that she absolutely loves it. And he was really happy because when he looked at her, he wanted to be able to have her and this story from his life to all be in one place at one time. And so that was something I loved doing, and I would do in a minute for anyone. I absolutely love doing that kind of thing.
Well, I think that's so interesting because I don't know about you. I think I've posed this question to several of my guests. On a certain level, when you get dressed, mm-hmm. do you dress because of the mood you're in or because of a mood you want to feel? So jewelry, to me, has that same feeling about it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to wear certain pieces because it makes me feel good of the memory, of the story that it has. And I think that is just so lovely, and that makes it personal. And
yes, and actually, I've also done things like I believe that to some degree in meanings of certain stones, or people have some stones they absolutely love, or that they want to have close, or it was a loved one's birthstone or something like that, and then making something for them, you know, with those things that specifically for them. Like I get a sense of a person, I'll meet them, have some conversations with them, get a sense of their style, and they've asked me to create something just for them. And I love doing that. I absolutely love doing it. They'll say, oh, I love what you do. I trust it. I just want you to make it for me. I'm like, okay, I can do
but
that.
But I think that's a special gift you had, and it sounds as if that's a part of who you are. And even though you are an architect, and I find it very interesting how being an architect is somewhat similar. Somebody may come to you and want you to design a particular home or, I don't know, an office building for them, and these are the parameters.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
So it's a very personalized piece. When you look at, let's say, the Disney Hall in Los Angeles by mm-hmm. Frank Gehry and his museum, the Bilbao Museum, you can tell a lot about him through the design. It's very personal.
Yes, and I love it. I love his work. Actually, can I tell it? I have time to tell a quick Frank Gehry story.
Yeah.
I've met Frank Gehry a couple times, and it so happens he was speaking at an event that wasn't, it was a relatively casual event. Anyway, it just so happens he and I were walking out the door at the same time. It wasn't really a break, but I had to go to the bathroom. I guess he did too. Walking out, trying to go to the bathroom. And so we're going there, and I said, hi. You know, I said, by the way, I know you make jewelry, and a friend of mine has one of your pieces. And I said, but, you know, I make jewelry too. And he says, oh, really? I happen to have had one of my pieces on. I said, this is something I make. And I showed it to him, and he leaned in, and he looked at it closely, and then he looked me straight in the eye, and he said, competitor. And I loved it. It was like the most wonderful compliment I could have possibly had. I said,
that's not a validation about you. You got it from one of the top dogs.
Yeah, I totally admire his work. I love his work. And I'm not going to comment on the jewelry, but I love his architecture. And then just that he would have said to me that he called me a competitor was just like, I'm like, ah, it was awesome. That was the best thing. I like it wouldn't have been as good.
Yes, you're so. That's a wonderful story. That's a wonderful story. But it's very true when you look at his architecture, and I mean, I guess that's the difference between a good architect and a great one. It's somehow personalized. It stands out. It tells you a story. You feel compelled to wear it, to touch it, to encapsulate yourself in it. And mm-hmm. and it affects other people as well.
Yes, and I just want to mention that I'm actually making a completely new line of work right now. It's for a show called Skin Deep, an exhibition called Skin Deep. And it's kind of a bit of a political topic, which is not me. I mean, I have been a path of political person, but it's about basically the black-white conversation in America, which is not a conversation or a topic that plays a big role in my life at all. But the woman that runs the gallery asked me to make a suite of work in black and white.
Well, what is, if I ask, before you continue, what is the controversy between black and white? What is that conversation?
Well, gosh, she uses a quote about on the advertising the show that I don't have handy, but it's just about the issue of racism, black-white racism, the history of it. Is it behind us? Is it still with us? You know, looking back and looking forward, you know, do we have equality or don't we in the races, in the way our society operates? And I think most everyone will tell you with some of the kind of advertising that's gone on with regard to, not advertising, but some of the negative press with relative to Barack Obama that relates to race issues, people will say, well, I guess we're not past it, you know, in particular. And then so I think the quote has something to do with, I don't have it handy. I mean, I guess I should. A little ill-prepared here, I suppose. But
can people go onto your website for the Skin Deep find out more information about the Skin Deep?
It's not up, but I will definitely put it up. But, you know, the Loft at Liz's is where this will be held. And
what are the dates of that?
It opens on October 23rd, and if they Google my name, if you just Google my name in quotations, which, you know, Monique Bureau, which is on my website, and the Loft at Liz's is on my website as well, the location, and I'll make sure I update my website to reflect this exhibition. It's on La Brea, just north of a block and a bit north of Wilshire. On the 23rd of October, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., it will be opening. And for anyone who listens to KCRW, local radio station, Garth Trinidad, who's the guy there dealing in music, he's going to be in the show as well, which will be interesting because he's music, but he's doing fine art. Anyway, the work I'm doing is all black and white. She asked me to make that. Now, I have to honestly tell you, as I've been making this work, I'm going to tell you, jewelry cannot take on political issues.
We will see. We will see. I can't believe it. We're almost out of time, and I want to get some information out to our listeners. Those of you who are listening outside of the Los Angeles area, you can still be in touch with the fabulous Monique Bureau, because I'm going to give you some contact information. Again, her website is adornthyself.com, where you'll find an email address to email her, or if you want to call her, her number is 310-315-1329. And Monique, you are just a delight, and it's been so lovely chatting with you. I don't know where the time went.
Me neither. It was wonderful. Thank you very much. This was really great. You're wonderful. I love talking to you.
Oh, well, thank you. You are so welcome, and I'm looking forward to seeing you at the Skin Deep and your new jewelry design. And again, I want to thank Monique Bureau for joining me today on the show. And again, her website is adornthyself.com, 310-315-1329. Please join me next week when my guest will be international singing star Carolyn Waters. You're going to love this the sound that this woman has. She's just incredible. And speaking of incredible, I'm going to leave you with Keith Chagall, and She's Incredible. So this is Lauren Leibowitz. Thanking you so much for joining listening to the show. We'll see you next time, and I look forward to helping you find comfort in your own shoes.